Ghost, I'm singing, ghost, I'm singing, ghost, I'm singing, ghost, I'm singing. Ghost, I'm singing, ghost, I'm singing, ghost, I'm singing, ghost, I'm singing.
It's not for sale. 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 I'm telling you, democracy is not for sale. Not for sale. Not for sale. I'm telling you, democracy is not for sale. Burning with the justice ghost.
The justice ghost.
Justice in my hand. It's not in my feet. Justice in my heart. It's all over me. Justice in my hand.
It's not
in my feet. Justice in my heart. It's all over me. Telling you, my neighborhood is not for sale. Not for sale. Not for sale. I'm telling you, my neighborhood is not for sale. Burning with the justice ghost.
The justice ghost.
Justice in my hand. Justice in my feet. Justice in my heart. It's all over me. Justice in my hand. Justice in my feet. Justice in my heart. It's all over me.
Feel it in my hands. Feel it in my feet. Feel it in my heart. All over me, feel it in my hands, feel it in my heart, feel it in my mind, in my world. Feel it in my hands, feel it in my feet, feel it in my heart. All over me, feel it in my hands, feel it in my heart, feel it in my mind, in my world.
Imagination's not for sale, not for sale, not for sale. I'm telling you, imagination's not for sale. Burning with the justice ghost. Ah, oh, 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 ah, all over me. Oh, hey, hey. Not for sale. 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 Not for
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. And now we return to Dr. Carl Hart, Tom Ashbrook, and The War on Drugs.
Hal in Montpelier, Vermont. Hal, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What do you think?
I think that decriminalization of drugs such as crack cocaine and other drugs would be a terrible slippery slope to be going down. I'm in total disagreement with Governor Shumlin's having the legislature pass decriminalization in Vermont. I just think it's a terrible way to go. I am in recovery. I have been for 6+ years. And crack cocaine brought me to my knees, and all it took was one hit. And by the way, I'm in recovery for a multitude of substance abuse. But nevertheless, I've recovered. I have a job. I have a car. I have a house. I'm married. And I just think that it's the wrong way to go. I think it's like slapping someone on the wrist for what really is a some grievous offenses.
Hal, we've got it. There's a lot on the table here. I appreciate your call very much as well. Carl Hart, I'm going to bring both of those to you. There's a lot there, but I want to, if I may, welcome into our conversation with me here in the studio, Dr. Alvin Poussant, psychiatrist at Harvard University Medical School, specializes in African-American families, but the research goes wide. He's co-author with Bill Cosby of Come On, People, On the Path from Victims to Victors. He's author himself of Lay My Burden Down, The Mental Health Crisis Among African Americans, back in 2000. Alvin Poussant, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
So there's a lot on the table here already, but at the heart of it is Carl Hart's argument that the war on drugs has done more damage than good by a long shot, in his assessment, and that we ought to decriminalize pretty much right across the board and address problems that lie beneath drug use rather than going after the drugs themselves. What do you say?
I think the war on drugs, Dr. Hart is correct. It's had devastating effects on the black community, the black family, and particularly on young black men. What happened with the war on drugs is they went after black men and Latinos and incarcerated them. So we have a prison population of blacks and Latinos for possession of drugs. Mm-hmm. The experience of incarceration itself helps to destroy them mentally much more than the drug would do anything to them, mm-hmm. particularly if they're using it recreationally. So that this has been a profound problem, and people are paying a lot of attention to the fact that a lot of black males have indeed been almost eliminated from opportunities and chances in American society because of the war on drugs. And because of disparities in sentencing, it's mostly minority men who got those five-year mandatory sentences for 5 grams of crack cocaine, and mostly white men and Latinos, too, use powdered cocaine, and they had to have 500 grams to get those mandatory five-year sentences. That's changed a little bit. I think in 2010, Obama signed some legislation so that the ratio, instead of being 100 to 1, mm-hmm. is 18 to 1, but that's not good enough. I don't know that they should be putting them away at all.
Well, do you go after the discrepancy in sentencing, or do you go to Carl Hart's point? Deregulate this.
Well,
I mean, decriminalize
this. I think decriminalizing
this.
I want to say something because one of the things that we need to make clear here is we need to make sure that the public understand what I mean when I say decriminalization. Now, decriminalization is not legalization. Decriminalization means that it's still illegal. It simply means, as Dr. Poussant correctly pointed out, it simply means that people will no longer get criminal records when they're caught with drugs or drug using. Now, drug sales are still illegal, whereas alcohol is legal for people over 21. And when we think about decriminalization, we're talking about adults, not children.
But this is a big change. You're going from a potential five years in prison to something like a traffic ticket in decriminalization.
That's right. That's exactly right.
That's a big change.
Portugal, that's right. That's a change for us. But one of the things that we have to do in this country that we want to make be clear, the country has had an adolescent conversation about drugs. What I'm trying to do with High Price is make us have an adult conversation about drugs. Now, that means that we have to be re-educated in terms of some of our assumptions. As your callers point out, the last caller points mm-hmm. out that he's in treatment because of crack cocaine. Yet he also points out that he has multiple drug using problems. Now, what we know is that only a small percentage of people actually meet criteria for addiction who use these substances. Most of them, 80-90% of them, don't have a problem with it.
But what about his safety? He says slippery slope. He says crack brought me to my knees. One hit.
Right. Now, so when we think about that, let's think about alcohol. There are people that can say the same thing about alcohol, but the vast majority of us drink alcohol with no problem. And so if we want, as a society, it's okay. If we decide to base our public policy on this small minority of users, that's absolutely fine. As long as the public understands that's what we're doing. The vast majority of people don't have that problem. But yeah, okay, if we decide let's base our public policy on this small number of people, I'm okay with that, as long as we're honest with it.
Carl Hart, please stand by. Alvin Poussant, so you're critical of the war on drugs, and we understand the serious characterization that you're giving us of it, why you would be opposed to it. So what's the alternative here? Is it decriminalization? To your mind?
I think decriminalization is part of the answer. As Dr. Hart points out, is not the legalization of drugs.
Yes, but it's darn close to it. When you compare a 5 years in prison to maybe a $100 fine and no criminal record, that's It's not legalization, but it's darn close.
Look at the benefits of no criminal record.
Sure, no, I get it. But it's a big difference. I don't want to minimize the difference.
Yeah, that's very, very important. Also, the fact that when they put someone in jail for 5 years, they're not treating, quote, the addiction if they think they have one. Mm-hmm. They're not helping them to deal with the drug. They're just putting them in prison for punishment. If they want to be on drugs, they'll come out and they'll return to the drugs. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a narrow approach to dealing with people who may have a substance abuse problem, who need help from therapists, psychiatrists, from the entire community, and opportunities to fit in the community and have a productive life.
Let me ask you this, Dr. Poussin. On balance, would it be better for the African-American community, just to take one, and it's by no means the only community involved here, by no means, but would it be better on balance for that community if these drugs, maybe a lot of them, maybe all of them, were decriminalized, so you take away the big prison population, everything that goes with that, but you've got regulated but decriminalized drugs there? Would you favor that?
Well, you know, it would not just be decriminalization. I think mm-hmm. also you're talking about a whole program, treatment program, programs to deal with issues of education, families, high schools, that these things are important in building and helping these youth. They can't come out of jail and have opportunities to have a productive life and contribute to the community. So that would be very, very critical in decriminalization.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't just stand alone and be
Hear great speeches and interviews at Access Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Yeah, come on, all you big strong men. Uncle Sam needs your help again. He's got himself in a terrible jam. Way down yonder in Vietnam. So put down your books and pick up a gun. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7. Open up the pearly gates. Ah, ain't no time to wonder why we're all gonna die. Well, come on, General, let's move fast. Your big chance has come at last. Gotta go out, get those reds. The only good commie is one that's dead. And you know that peace can only be won when the throne of all the kingdom come. And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7. Open up the pearly gates. Well, there ain't no time to wonder why we're all gonna die. Just hope and pray that if they drop the bomb, they drop it on the Viet Cong. And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7. Open up the pearly gates. Well, ain't no time to wonder why we're all gonna die.
Well, come on, brothers, throughout the land. Pack your boys up to Vietnam. Come on, fathers, don't hesitate. Send them off before it's too late. Be the first one on your block to have your boy come home in a box.
And it's 1, 2, 3. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. And it's 5, 6, 7. Open up the pearly gates. Well, ain't no time to wonder why we're all gonna die.
Back to Tom Ashbrook Carl Hart and the War on Drugs.
Yes, Dr. Hart.
Carl Hart, for your approach to...
Can I echo Dr. Poisson's remarks? One of the things that I point out in High Price, I told this deeply personal story. I'm a scientist, and I don't usually communicate this way. One of the reasons that I told this deeply personal story was precisely what Dr. Poisson just said. There are multiple factors other than drugs. We have misplaced our efforts. But when we look at employment, skills, all of these things are far more important to any community than our focus, our misguided focus on drugs. And that's what my story highlights in the book.
Is your call for decriminalization contingent upon a presumption that society would then come in and fix education, grant opportunity, provide skills? Because we've been calling for all those steps for a long time, and we've never really done those.
We haven't done those because drugs are such great scapegoats. I mean, this has started, this is not new. This started back at the turn of the 20th century. If you go back to 1914, for example, there was a 1914 article published in the New York Times called "Negro Cocaine Fiends Are a New Southern Menace." In that article, it argued that black people in the South, when they take cocaine, they become more, black men, I should say, when they take cocaine, they become more murderous, they become better marksmen, they become unaffected by bullets. And it was used, this is powder cocaine we're talking about.
Yeah, the
and
same one used, that Cole Porter was writing about his lovely lyrics. Not
the
as a
same
problem.
One that the current president used, the same one that the president before him is thought to have used, the same one. But the point is that it was used as a scapegoat in order to vilify a certain community. The same thing is being done with drugs today. And it also allows us not to focus on the real problems, structural problems. When I came up in the 1980s, there were programs in my community, in these poor communities, that made sure that poor kids had summer jobs. We all worked in the summer. We had money in order to help contribute to the household, buy clothing. All of those programs are gone.
Dr. Carl Hart in New York, please stand by there, author of the new book, High Price, A Neuroscientist's Journey of Self-Discovery That Challenges Everything You Know About Drugs and Society. Dr. Alvin Poussaint with me in the studio, author of Lay My Burden Down. It's great to have you both with us right here. Kanye West behind us right here with his new song, New Slave. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Y'all throwing contracts at me. You know that don't read. Throw up some Maybach keys. Say live feet. I know that we the new slave. Y'all can't mess with me. I moved my family out the country so you can't see where I stay. So go and grab the report so I can smash his record. He try to confuse it with some BS like the New World Order. Meanwhile, the DEA teamed up with the CCA. They try and lock people up. They try and make new slaves. See, that's their probably on prison. Get your peace today. They probably all in the Hamptons bragging about what they made. Y'all about to turn it up. I'm about to tear it down. I'm about to air it out. Now what the hell they gonna say now? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are hearing a new call this hour to end the war on drugs from a neuropsychopharmacologist, African-American, grew up on Mean Streets, now at Columbia, who says we need to reframe our thinking about drugs and the problems around them. Dr. Carl Hart is with us. His new book is High Price, A Neuroscientist's Journey of Self-Discovery That Challenges Everything You Know About Drugs and Society. You can read an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Also with me in the studio is Dr. Alvin Poussaint, psychiatrist at Harvard University Medical School, co-author with Bill Cosby of Come On People, author of Lay My Burden Down, and with me right here in the studio. We're glad to have him. Lots of response online here. I'll get to some of that. Let me put one of these online comments to you, Carl Hart, there in New York. Frank writes to us about you, and he says, he acts as if there were no horrific consequences to crack cocaine. Those consequences, Frank writes, are why the war on drugs was started. What do you say to that perspective?
That's not true. You know, one of the things I want to make clear is that I am not advocating people go out and use drugs. I have two young kids, one 18, one 12. And so I understand people's concerns about drugs. The point is that the effects of drugs like cocaine has been so badly exaggerated to the public that we, as a result, have created this environment in which we go after these drugs at any cost to minority communities. And so one of the things I know, too, is that if people had the proper education about drugs, even the ones who we don't want to use, and if they do use, we could actually keep them safe. One thing that my 20-some-odd years of studying drugs in the lab has taught me is that drug effects are predictable. That is, as you increase the dose, you also increase the likelihood of toxic effects.
Mm-hmm.
But black men and black boys' interaction with police officers, however, as a result of this war on drugs, however, are not predictable. Too often, the young black person ends up dead. That's why we have Trayvon Martin. That's why we have the kid who was killed in the Bronx, Ramarley Graham, because the police officer thought he had marijuana. Those sorts of things trouble me more. I'm trying to keep more members of our society safe, not fewer.
Put a sense of scale up to all this. Carl Hart says that would give us an adult conversation rather than an adolescent conversation. Joe in Little Rock, Arkansas is calling. Hi, Joe. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to call in and weigh in a little bit and echo the doctor's sentiments about the need and the call for decriminalization and regulation. And specifically, so you spoke earlier about how a lot of people wouldn't be able to have ascended to certain positions had they been caught and convicted.
Carl Hart points to George W. Bush and Barack Obama among them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm an elected public official in my local government area, and also an Eagle Boy Scout with the Boy Scouts of America. And I also own a small business. And several of these things, specifically the public office, would not have been possible had I been caught and charged with an offense related to drug use in my past. And I've tried, it's easier to say what I haven't done than it is to say what I have, and I haven't done an injectable form of heroin, and I have not tried mescaline or peyote.
So what's your point with this? Are you saying, Joe, that we ought to decriminalize, as Carl Hart suggests, or?
Yes, absolutely. Decriminalize and regulate, and that would afford a much a greater, broader opportunity to a lot of people who otherwise would wind up in the jail system, in the penal system, for petty offenses. Petty
Do you see a discrepancy in your neck of the woods in Little Rock, Joe, racially, between who ends up in that jail or that prison in race terms?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that's across the board. It's not just in my area. Of course, it is. It's prevalent throughout this area. It's central and southern United States, and it's very observable. And I know several people who are of great sound mind and judgment, and you know, they have a good education, and they just have a mar on the record that you know, does a great deal to significantly hold them back in society,
yeah,
and keep them from obtaining, you know, or ascending to their absolute potential.
Joe, your story speaks to us. You got by that. Many do not. I appreciate your call from Little Rock.
Death isn't real to us. What is it? It's highly trained method actors. Every 17 seconds are dying in our faces. Ah! 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 Turn the channel, and then all of a sudden you've got a professional standing in an Iowa cornfield that is completely dead for miles. It's just yellow. And a poor farmer there, and they're having an interview, and there's a lot of sentimentality, and it's a very tabloid kind of sad situation. And the whole time that professional meteorologist or whatever he is assumes that the drought in the Midwest right now in the United States is a standalone tragedy, which is also what we got from the Brahmaputra River in northeastern India a few weeks ago, when 2,000 villages and hundreds of people lost their lives. And before that, it was the Colorado, the wildfires, and before that, and before that, this string of disasters. Each one is a separate, standalone event. Because we can't tell that story, that larger story, that really involves life and death. That larger story. It's a big story. We haven't had a story like that for a while to believe in. It would take some work, maybe. It's a bigger story than the United States of America, for instance. It's a lot bigger than my career. It's a lot bigger than... It's the Earth's life. You would have to connect all of those standalone tragedies in one narrative. And we can't do it. I picked up a magazine the other day, and I got it. There was an article there by Bill McKibben. He said something very simple. He just noticed some research. We have right now 2,700 billion tons of fossil fuel that has been discovered beneath the surface of this planet by oil companies, by countries like Kuwait and Venezuela and so forth. It's there. We can only allow 20% of that fossil fuel to be burned, or we will be burned. We will be the lake of hellfire. Even with just 20%, we've got problems. Even with just 20% coming up into our houses, into our power systems, we will lose whole coastal cities. We will have a radical increase in the temperature, which is already hot this summer. But if we burn any more than 20% of it, it's science fiction land. It's death. It's the apocalypse. It's the thing that we cannot describe right now because we don't believe it. But something in reading that article, something made me feel like I got a jolt. Suddenly I was living in the present tense because I did know the danger. There's death out there, right there. There's life here, death there, and there's a fire in the middle. Fossil fuel burning. And we can't put that fire out. It's not just that I was afraid of danger like I've got to be. That's part of it. But that wasn't all. It wasn't just being afraid from that article. It was life. There was something in it that was affirming. When I knew that death was that close, it was inside my life. And I was responsible for my life in a new way. I knew that I could risk my life in order to save life. For my child, for my neighbors, I felt I knew how close death was, and therefore, I hope I feel it right now, I hope we can feel it together, that we can know that we will risk our lives. Because if we go to that coal-fired power plant, if we go to that oil derrick, if we go and stop that ship full of oil from docking, if we go to that hole in the ground and say, this cannot surface, this fossil fuel cannot be brought up here. If there are 50,000 of us, if there are 100,000 of us, each of us will have to have that faith in my life. My life is worth risking. To make more life, I will risk this life. That's a kind of faith. Keep it. Keep that faith. Cultivate that faith. Name it. Get that feeling. Know what that feels like. And it'll be beyond bravery, beyond ego, beyond our country. We will be one with the earth. We will have the courage of the earth in us. We'll be as radical as the earth. I'll see you at that oil well. Earth, hallelujah.
And now, messages from Access Sacramento.